Oh, hello there. It's me, Corval, here. It's DeFi Thursday today. It's going to be a great show, guys. We got Beavis. We got Mikey. We're so glad you're here. We're going to be really positive today. We got some great news today. We're going to be talking about Tom Emmer, everyone's fan favorite. You know, I love talking about Congress. We're going to be talking about the FTX asset liquidation. We're going to cover Stoner Cats. And finally, there's an Islamic coin, dude. I'm really excited to talk about this. Guys, it's going to be great. Thanks for showing up today. Let's start the show.
Oh. They take your money, then they take you down with them. Let's do better together. ERN, extremely resilient, naturally.
What's up, guys? Austin here with BlockBytes, and I just wanted to give a big shout out to the team from Shimmer Network for sponsoring our channel. If you haven't looked into Shimmer yet, they are a DAG-based, feeless layer one network that's highly scalable. You can learn more by visiting shimmer.network.
Awkward, don't you think, Mikey? Yep. I was a little caught off guard, I'll be honest. I was messing with my tabs. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. Yeah, no, I'm all right. No, I thought the intro was great.
Dude, don't I thought you did it, Mikey.
You did a darn good job.
In my face. Opinion. I also lied. We don't have Beavis today.
Just we do.
He's just he'll be here in a little bit. But yeah, man, how you doing, man? Have you recovered from your incident on Tuesday?
I don't think so. I think that's still gnawing at the back of my head. But I'll be fine. Emmett gave me a little pep talk.
That's good. You needed it, dude. I could tell.
You told me to suck it up, little bitch.
Huh?
Little fat ass bitch.
Did he call you a bitch?
Yeah. Emmett did.
Up, dude. Yeah, you gotta jump that guy. You gotta get your 10 closest homies. You gotta jump them, dude. But let's talk about something a little bit more, I don't know. Cryptographic, is that the right term? Dude, you look very spiffy right now.
Thanks, man. You like that? You like what I just did? Dude, just kind like of you're... like rushed it back, dude.
Yeah, Mr. Clean, great point. Beavis is busy today. He's on Revelo today. He blew us off for Revelo, but he's supposed to come over here right after they round up, finish up. Who knows how long that'll be? But let's see. What do we want to start off today with, Mikey? You want to? We should have spun a wheel for this. Do you want to do Tom Emmer? You want to go to FTX asset liquidation? I'm going to leave it up to you.
Let's, which do you think Beavis would be on in a couple of minutes? What do you think he would have a better opinion on? What do you,
I really think he's going to have like a lot to say about the asset liquidation. So let's just talk about the CBDC, bro. Let's do the CBDC chat. All right.
Nice.
What does CBD stand for again?
Centralized bank.
Bull bros, dick and coins. Okay, Beach Boys want their hair back. That is kind of the look, dude. Beach Boys. All right, Toasty Alpha wants to talk about Tom. So let's talk about Tom, dude. Tell me what Tom Emmer's been up to.
So Tom Emmer, congressman from Minnesota, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
He's been fiddling around with the CBDC Anti-Surveillance State Act is what it is titled, this bill.
Okay.
He first proposed this back in January 2022, and he formally introduced it. You might, if you're listening, you might be remembering, like, I feel like this has already happened. Didn't he already introduce this?
Yeah. I thought we did talk about this.
He did. He introduced it. Formally introduced it to Congress in February 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out then, and it still is big news, you know, because who wants a CBDC? Not me personally. But so he's reintroduced it with two new additions, two changes. The first one bans intermediate CBDCs. An intermediate CBDC is a CBDC that's issued by the Fed and then managed by retail banks and other financial institutions. The second, which in this second part is kind of confusing to me. It's a removal. The second little amendment to this bill is the removal of a requirement for the Federal Reserve to report to Congress any potential CBDC pilot programs it might be studying. Tom Emmer said that this makes the bill, quote unquote, more narrowly focused. So like the first one, that checks out. Like, cool.
Okay.
Fed creates a CBDC, and I don't want retail banks or anything managing it. But the second amendment, removal of a requirement for the Federal Reserve to report to Congress any potential CBDC pilot programs it might be studying. So they're just going to do their own thing now?
The Federal Reserve? Yeah, they don't have to report that they're studying CBDC programs, but the first one removes their ability to implement one. Well, yeah, I think Tom is up to a little something sketchy here, dude. I think he wants them to work on it in secret.
That's honestly what it sounds very secretive, but also I might just be not reading through the lines.
Maybe illiterate?
Huh?
You may be illiterate?
I might not be able to read this.
Oh, okay. You know?
But no, I do think it's something, you know, this whole bill, Tom Emmer claims that he does have support from Democrats. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Elizabeth Warren is not one of them. She's been talking about a CBDC for years, bro.
Yeah.
But I do imagine that there are a few Democrats across the aisle that would like this to see this CBDC Anti-Surveillance State Act ratified.
Interesting.
If they care about Americans' privacy at all, I mean, they would. Which makes sense why, you know, Congress people like Elizabeth Warren are so into a CBDC. She's just in it. She just wants that Fed money, man. She wants that bank money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She wants that seniorage money, right? She wants to maintain state control over the currency is essentially what it is, right? The whole purpose of these CBDCs. I'm sure everyone watching the show knows the term already, you know, central bank digital currency. Essentially just a digital dollar, more perfect in form, right? So what are the chances you think of this actually getting passed? Like, where is this? Oh. It just was introduced to the House? Has it even gone to committee yet?
It was just reintroduced.
Okay. So they had to rework it. It got kicked out before. So this thing's just been bouncing around for a while.
I imagine it's going to keep bouncing around
mm-hmm.
for a while. I do... In Congress, there's been a lot of digital asset talk and speculation over the past couple months. There's been several, you know, testimonies that involve Gary Gensler speaking to Congress. And there's only going to be more. So, you know, people like Patrick McHenry, Tom Emmer, Cynthia Lummis, Warren Davidson, who are all Republicans, they feel very strongly that a Federal Reserve issued CBDC is not the way to go. At the same time, I believe if I recall correctly, Cynthia Lummis is interested in a state CBDC though.
Curious. So each state having their own CBDC, except for Florida, which under the reign of DeSantis would not be able to issue one. Yeah. Interesting stuff.
So,
I mean, how would a state by state CBDC thing play out, Mikey? What would that even look like?
I think it would look like, you know, you enter Wyoming and you have the Wyoming state CBDC to use for transactions in state.
Has that thing been implemented? Do you just use it to pay state taxes?
No. I don't think it's been implemented at all, but I remember it was being discussed. But you know, state by state CBDC could be interesting. At least it's not like, you know, Big Brother.
Well, I mean, it's slightly smaller brother than Big Brother. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's more in line with the American Republican spirit. Republican, not in the sense of the party, but in the ideal, right, of your local government. Although it does seem to fly in the face of a lot of, you know, like directly the Constitution. I believe the Constitution very specifically outlines that the Congress federally is responsible for issuing the currency. Right. So it's interesting that this is all playing out in this way. I don't think personally, Mikey, if you want to hear my opinion on it, I don't know if we're going to see any real resolution or any movement on this in any significant way, because I don't think there's really a lot of political energy behind it. It feels like to me that this is a little bit of, and I've said this before about other political stuff. It seems more of like just playing to a base. How do you feel about that? I think Emmer's just trying to like garner more general support from maybe pro-crypto, anti-CBDC people more than actually accomplish any specific policy goal, just because there's no real desperation out there for this. There's not an active CBDC development program. There's no real proposed implementations at the moment. It's very preemptive.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Wanted to be better early than late. Yeah.
I do agree with you in the part that there's no. It feels like there's no real urgency behind it. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of just like they're laying the stones to prevent this from happening. But I'm happy to see that. I don't think. I don't want a CBDC. I don't want to use that.
Mm.
But then again, you know what? I don't want to use it, but I think it's inevitable. I think it will happen. I mean, why wouldn't it?
I honestly think that
it's gonna happen.
So blockchain backed currencies are as superior as we claim them to be. It is inevitable, isn't it?
So with right. Well, and so with some of these, with this bill, like the the CBDC Anti-Surveillance State Act, think about it like this: like they start at the very top, like forbidding the Federal Reserve to even make one.
Okay.
And they keep coming back, little changes here and there. If they can get to a point where there is still some sense of privacy protection for American users, then that'd be a win. And that's what I think is being worked on right now. So I don't think it'll be resolved anytime soon, but it's inevitable for me, CBDC.
I see. It's inevitable. We're constructing the Tower of Babel here, Mikey. You know what I'm saying? We're living in Babylon, baby. The slow encroachment on your privacy every single year. Although it seems people have lost the taste for it post 9/11. 9/11, they had a really long, strong push, but I think it's losing steam now. But anyway, let's not get any more political, really. Let's hop onto something else real quick. We got Tubby Cats. No, not Tubby Cats. Stoner Cats. Are you familiar with this project, Mikey? You're my NFT guy, so you know a lot about this, I'm sure.
I remember when this first like dropped. I was considering buying a couple, but then I realized that I'm not an idiot.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, it seems like kind of a nice idea. For those of you who don't know,
they wanted to do a whole TV show around it. Mm-hmm. And it had Mila Kunis, obviously, there she is in the photo. Ashton Kutcher was attached to it.
Yeah, Chris remember Rock, Jane Fonda.
There was that
Mr.
video.
Mr. Vitalik was also involved.
Right, well, there was that video with Ashton Kutcher, Mila Kunis, and Vitalik in like their kitchen. Just hanging out. Yeah. Which is so random.
Mm-hmm.
But so, I mean, and the art wasn't bad. It's kind of like that, like, old school, like Looney Tunes looking. Yeah. And there has been a couple episodes. I haven't watched one. But the idea is there. I mean, I think they're probably the first NFT project to have a cartoon show attached to it. I think that was the goal from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it really ever took off.
Yeah, I don't know how successful it was, but for those of you who don't know, just a quick summary of what it was is, you mint a little profile picture of the stoner cat, and it's supposed to fund this animated show about these animated cats who live with their old lady, and they all smoke weed. So kind of like threadbare for like a plot and a premise, very basic. But the big news right now is, one, Mila Kunis was groomed. That's one of the things going around right now. From that after that 70s show, or as a result of that 70s show. But the bigger news, the thing that we're concerned about, is the SEC is suing Stoner Cats for an unlicensed security offering. Because when you purchased the Stoner Cats, there was language that implied that you would make money, yeah, because the Stoner Cats would be worth more because of the success of the show. You could, or the creator of the Stoner Cats NFT would get royalties. So to me, we talked about a previous NFT project that had gotten sued by the SEC. I think it was the first one, maybe last week or the week before. We talked about an NFT project from the guy who made like Quest Bars, because it also promised additionally like future monetary rewards. What's interesting to me about this specific lawsuit is the language isn't as blatant. In the previous lawsuit, they were saying straight up, you could make money, you can make returns off of this. In this, it was just saying, you know, the value of these things will increase as the show, if the show is successful. Yeah. Which I guess is fairly similar, but not all that different from how a lot of NFT projects market themselves. Almost like, Mikey, you could probably name a couple NFT projects that in their mint are essentially promising you a share of some reward of a future endeavor, right?
Not on top of my head, but probably because if I saw them say something like that, then I stayed away from it.
True. Well, I mean, like, you see it all the time, though. Is it just not in the official writing? Because people always seem to be purchasing off the expectation that the project will be successful so they can resell them later.
Right. And so with Stoner Cats, that hopefully is different from other NFT projects, is that Stoner Cats explicitly said price will go up. You will make money if you purchase our NFT.
If we're successful.
So like, and I'm hoping that there's really hard evidence of the Stoner Cats, you know, founders, team saying that in a Medium post, on Twitter, from an official source, because yeah, otherwise, like, if it's just because everybody else thought it would go up, then all NFT projects are fucked.
Wow. So as a result of this, they've had to pay $1 million civil penalty.
Right. It's only $1 million fine. And
they've also had to destroy any NFT they still hold and establish a fair fund to refund investors who purchase NFTs in the primary sale. Apparently, they also functioned as tickets to watch the show. So, quite interesting. Oh, man, Mikey's gone now. It's just me.
No, I'm right here. I had to plug my laptop in. Yeah, you know, they made $8 million from the initial mint, or have made $8 million to this date. $1 million fine.
Insane. Positively insane, dude. I mean, this is the regulation that was coming, though. We all kind of knew it was coming, right? Andre was right. He called it like a year ago, dude. Or at least it feels like a year ago. The regulation is ramping up. I wonder what the next NFT project is on the chopping block. What do you think, man? Tubby Cats?
You know, maybe they're going after these, like, maybe the SEC is going after these little fish. These guppies to eventually maybe try to hit the big boys like Yuga Labs.
They're going to come after Yuga Labs. Has Yuga Labs ever promised that you'll make money with apes, though? They just promised you in the IP, right? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to stake my life and reputation on that.
What reputation?
If I'm wrong, come kill me, please. No,
please.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, I mean, not that fascinating. It's kind of boring, but it's important to keep your eye on it, man. The SEC is really getting aggro now, man. They're letting these lawsuits fly.
Yeah.
And speaking of at lawsuits, our boy Brian Armstrong is pretty pushy about some. He wants to defend BeFi via litigation. I was going to say the wrong word. Litigation, not legislation. Here we go. Yeah, so our bald boy Brian, he's calling for court action to set legal precedent for DeFi. Fascinating. This is the actually fascinating stuff. I keep saying fascinating stuff, but he's essentially calling for regulatory clarity in DeFi, and he's pointing out that they're not financial businesses, and it's highly unlikely the Commodity Exchange Act even applies to them. Mm-hmm. My hope is these DeFi protocols take these cases to court to establish precedent. The courts have been proven to be very willing to uphold the rule of law. The only thing this is accomplishing is to push an important industry offshore. This is echoing a call we've heard for months now that, you know, really they're just making America a hostile environment for DeFi unnecessarily. But Chris Black has some good points. These DeFi devs have backdoors to drain all funds and make any changes to the code that they want. How is that decentralized? I wish Beavis was here. I would ask him, is that true? Can you do that? But it is quite a fucked up place right now. We see all these scams. Is it really the CFTC's place, though, to step in?
First of all, like, you know, Brian Armstrong's always going to say this. Our big bad bald Brian friend.
Yeah, he's in the arena now. He's got to.
You know, like he's always on some type of like, we need proper regulations for DeFi.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say that, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying he can't back it up, but like you can say those words, we need proper regulation, all you want, but like what does that look like? No one knows.
Mm-hmm.
So just leave it unregulated, in my opinion.
Leave it the Wild West, dude. They should just let DeFi do it. Leave it
the Wild West, man. You know, like keep these sexes locked down. But like once you leave the sex, dude, once you leave the sex, it's all up to you. Once you're in that Wild West, do your diligence, do your research. And if you lose money, it's on you. Let me lose my money.
So Mikey is calling for true libertarianism. And I think he's onto something, guys. What do you guys think? Should we just like, we've been just assuming that regulation should happen and is good. We really need to take a step back here and think, maybe Brian's fucking wrong here, dude. Maybe we shouldn't take this to court. Maybe we should just keep doing whatever the hell we want to do, dude. I kind of like that bot, Mikey. True pirate, like we all should just rebase to Somalia, live in their pirate's code. Would you move? What's the
most
place you would move to? Not Somalia. That's all maybe too hardcore for you. But where would you move if they outlawed DeFi in the United States right now today? Where would you go, Mikey?
If I like had the means.
Well, yeah, you're independently wealthy. Of course you do.
I don't know. El Salvador, maybe.
El Salvador?
Yeah.
You know, El Salvador was the most dangerous country on the planet until he locked up all those guys recently.
Right, was.
So only marginally better than Somalia.
Move to Bitcoin City.
Bitcoin City. I think the closest you're going to find is Akon City in Africa that he's working on. I don't know what country it is he's building it in, but Mr. Got Plenty has a question for us. And I'm really interested to hear your answer, Mikey. How do you guys take profit on your investments? Do you sell the bag, take a loan out against it, let her out based on percentages? How do you, the masters of the universe, do it? So the masters of the universe have very complex schemes for taking profits that are really dependent on, when I'm talking about the masters of the universe, I mean like the true genius professionals on like Wall Street, you know, like with quants and everything. They have like structures based off of like the underlying risk of the assets and kind of like their timeline, like their time horizon for when they're looking to take profit. Me personally, how I do it in this crazy wacky world when I'm being actually conscientious and following my own rules properly, what I do is if we, yeah, Disco Chuck, see, this is what I typically do, like an idiot.
That's me. Yeah.
But no, even then, when I let it ride too hard in, you know, this high volatility environment, crypto, when I let it ride too hard, I usually do pull up my principal first. So I can say that at least I didn't lose money if it craters. But generally what I do is I do like a percentage based withdrawal based off of like kind of my conviction on the long-term prospects of the project. So, you know, 10, 20% on top of my profit, like whatever I was looking to keep, whatever I was looking actually to make, I probably would have benefited more from just selling the whole bag. But yeah, that's my strategy. I usually protect my initial investment first and then do percentages on top of that. And then when you do more complex stuff, I kind of ladder out. But what about you, Mikey? How do you approach taking profits when that happens to you, which I know it happens very regularly that you're in the profit?
No, I'm on Disco Chuck's team, man. Never take profits. Never surrender. Hashtag DeFi tarded, dude.
Also, Mr. Got Plenty of. Yeah, he says that. Do you take a loan out against it? So, I like to take a loan out against it.
Right. I
tend to do that more so when I'm actually trying to cash out, more than anything. But there are like specific situations where it's more beneficial for me. Like, let's say if I want to hold on to like Bitcoin, Bitcoin is running up, I don't necessarily want to get rid of my Bitcoin because I have such a long term conviction in it. So I'll just like borrow against it to leverage into other stuff. But I'm not going to, you know, take a loan out against my Curve. I'm not that heavy, you know what I mean? To take profit on it. I feel like people that generally take their profit entirely out on loans, it's just like very risky. It's almost something to me that I would only really consider doing like 100% if I was like a scammer. Like I don't care about the underlying collateral at all. But yeah, that's pretty much how I approach it. Hopefully that's helpful. Hopefully that answers your question. All right. But yeah, so Brian Armstrong, champion of the industry here, but also maybe pulling Sauron's eye a little bit too close to us here. Do you think he's already involved in lawsuits. Does he have any more ammunition to fire at in the legal shit if for base? He's just trying to get ahead of it.
I think Coinbase will be fine on the legal front. Mm-hmm. I think they're flush.
Yeah, I mean, Base is a huge cosign, you know, for the industry or for DeFi specifically us.
Well, you know, like that's one of the other things that I was thinking about earlier is that Brian's asking, you know, like all these DeFi protocols that are getting sued need to or hit with some sort of, you know, lawsuit, should like fight back. Well, shoot, you know. What about Boob Finance? You think they have money for legal teams? That's just an example. Not exactly Boob Finance. We just like to talk about them.
Mm-hmm. I love Boob Finance.
Me too.
Dude, I completely spaced on what you were saying, though. I'm sorry, because I was looking at this guy, Chris Bleck, fierce advocate for immutable, unstoppable, decentralized tech, vicious adversary of everything that pretends to be but isn't. I've seen him around on Twitter quite a bit. He's saying that everything, digging into his little argument that everything in DeFi is a backdoor, he's arguing that multisigs are the backdoor. Do you agree with this? Do you think multisigs are the blight on the industry that he's making them out to be? Like, I don't necessarily think so. I think it's kind of goofy to say that everything has to be perfectly programmed to be immutable forever.
That'd be great.
It'd be great. If it was all perfectly programmed.
Right. Like, that'd be great, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I hate to break it to you. I don't think that's actually, like, a backdoor. I'd be interested to hear what Chad thinks about this, too. Do multisigs give you guys pause? Because that's kind of what this guy's saying to Brian here, that just because you have a multisig somewhere along the way, that's, like, a backdoor for devs to drain all the funds. Which, I mean, I guess is true, right?
Yeah.
We got 4 of the 9 devs to agree we're going to rug the project. Sure. We could.
Right. We're not even drain funds, but, you know, depending on how their OPSEC is, I mean, even just a normal, what's it called? The phishing scam, just a social
engineering.
Social engineering, you know, mm-hmm. if they don't have good OPSEC. That's happened before. So yeah, multi-sig gives me incredible pause, but it's also until we can develop, until there's a way to, you know, replace or root out the multi-sig, it's the best thing that the industry has.
Yeah.
So.
True. We got to work with what we got. Wally's pointing out it's more of a front door than a multi-sig is more of a front door than a back door, which I guess you're right. It's more like the front door to the house. You need the key to get in. Yeah, and it's not even that hidden. But, you know, you got to do what you can to get engagement. He's trying to get paid by Elon. I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. All right, let's see. What else we got here? We got
Blockbiters for life.
Blockbiters for life. We love the support, dude. What else we got here? We got some more fun stuff here.
Right. So this has all still been pretty negative.
Yeah, it's been pretty negative.
Is there any fun stuff?
Well, I have one here. I'm giving you guys a super sneak peek. I'm not supposed to share this with you guys. This is like the true alpha. This is really the only alpha I've ever provided on the show. This is not financial advice. This is just something I saw interesting. Ignore his numbers, okay? But it is a trade or an opportunity that has me intrigued, and I might try out myself. But again, this is not financial advice. I'm not telling you to do this. I just think it's kind of cool. So I'm on here on Delphi Digital, and I see this guy, Priyansh Patel, and he's provided a trade that he's going to take and the kind of the reasoning behind it. So one, he's talking about in this thread here, Polkadot, right? Dot. Alt-chain, layer one, very popular at the time when it launched, or not, maybe not very popular. It was a main contender during like the alt wars, the alt-chain wars, right? And one of the strategies that chains tried to do to retain market share during this battle was locking, right? You would lock like your native asset, in this instance, DOT, and you would get allocations or tokens from projects built on that chain. Mm-hmm. So back in 2021, the first batch of parachain crowd loans was held, wherein 113 million DOT was contributed, out of which 99.1 million are yet to be refunded. So you're going to see 99 million DOT come back onto the market, right? And it's a very simple unlock strategy. I'm sure you've heard about this if you trade at all in crypto. When an unlock's about to happen, you short the token because you're expecting most of that to hit the market and people to sell. Hello, Bebas, CEO of Byte Mason. We're talking about Polkadot and how someone might be able to make money if they're willing to do a little trade, but not giving financial advice, just the strategy here this guy Priyansh has provided. So basically, I was reading this thing here. Oh, Epstein. Anyway, I want to talk about the new Phantom CMO. I got so distracted by chat. Basically, anyway,
how did I get CEO of Byte Mason on my name here?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I didn't even put that.
Basically, the strategy is, I could get more into it here, but he basically wants to short DOT because they're having this massive unlock. The new loans are so much smaller than they were previously. So there's no real reason for anyone to relock up their DOT. A person's probably just willing to eat their losses. So he's saying short DOT, and then conversely long Maker, because Maker is long Frax, because Frax is going to introduce real world assets much like Maker did. And when Maker introduced real world asset vaults, Maker's price went from about 500 to 1200. So his idea is take a bearish approach and take a bullish approach. Bullish price action on something that's good news, bearish price action on something that's bad news, short on the bearish price action on bad news. I think it's pretty interesting. Something I'm going to check out. Got that from Delphi Digital. Now, Bebas, welcome to the show, dude. Glad you're here.
Sorry for being late.
It's all good, dude. How was the other show, man? How was your other lady, huh?
Good. Talking to the Revelo guys is always great because they ask like the best possible questions.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, really, really good. We were just talking about the Oath ecosystem changes.
The what?
The Oath ecosystem changes.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You got any other new ones since we talked last week?
Just enhancements to the original ones. Probably I would recommend, shout out Revelo Intel, listening to their What's On My Mind podcast, which just finished. It was a live stream. That's why I'm so sweaty. I've been talking for 90 minutes.
Nice, dude. Nice and sweaty Beavis, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to put your feet to the fire here now, dude. Not really. It's not gonna be as. I'm not gonna ask as good of questions as they got over at Revelo. I'm not gonna be asking about you, your freaking distributions and projections and all that. But what I am gonna ask you is, what do you know about FTX's asset liquidations? Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have heard about it. I think It's kind of neat. I think they can dump $50 million week one and then $100 million every week thereafter. Their primary focus is on minimizing price impact. All of the market makers and liquidators are able to hedge their liquidations, which essentially means they can like do the like whale thing where they, you know, short and then dump or what have you. Which could be really compelling. It could be a way for them to get more of that return there. I would say DWF Labs, I think, offered to just buy like a ton of their assets. There are also more OTC offers. They're going to be TWAPing. They're going to be being extra careful. They're going to be hedging everything. So it's them. Yeah, they're going to be twopping all their, they're going to be liquidating them over an extended period.
They're going to be licking their twops, dude.
Yeah, I think the
nasty.
It sounds a lot scarier, this liquidation, than I think it really is. And it's a good way to get retail to fill your shorts. But I mean, it's going to have impact. I just don't think it's going to have the impact that people think it's going to. And hopefully all of it or most of it just gets settled outside of the market, which it won't all, but I think there are enough OTC buyers that they can just, you know, shift some entries around on the ledger.
Yeah. So I was seeing this also very negatively portrayed, people saying, you know, we're already in a downward trend. This is just more pain, more pain, more pain. And I kind of had this filed under more negativity until I saw this point, which you addressed here, that, you know, they have agreements to kind of hedge the price movement that for the assets they're going to sell, specifically Bitcoin and Ethereum, though. So I think the impact on Ethereum and Bitcoin, like you're saying, probably going to be kind of negligible, probably not really going to matter. Yeah. The thing that I think would be most concerning is the Sol. That's about 11%, 16% of the overall circulating supply of Solana. And now they obviously don't have like a strong incentive to just dump it all to zero. You know, like they're trying to get the maximum value off of these assets as well, right? When they're selling them, because they want to make their creditors whole, right? Yeah. But that's a lot of Sol. Does the market really want it? Makes me think a lot of the positive news out about Sol is maybe to drive the price up, to maybe drive some demand to this massive amount of supply that's going to be added to the market.
100%.
And as far as I know, the court did not give them authorization to hedge this at all, probably because the legality of Sol as an asset is a little bit more complicated than Bitcoin and Ethereum at this point. Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Biebs?
I mean, dude, it's going to be like, it could be a bloodbath, but will there be enough, like, demand from firms to stymie the bloodbath? I'm not sure. I think like the people shilling Solana right now are insane. It's like, and it's just like, you know, maybe they have illiquid SOL tokens, or, you know, I don't know why you would do that. Maybe Mikey, you can enlighten us. Also, your mic is crazy hot, Mikey. It's like lava hot.
Wait, what?
It's like, you know, when a mic is super sensitive and extremely like loud. No, Mikey's.
Oh, is that better?
A little bit.
Do you have reduced mic background noise on, Mikey?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not like making noise. It's just, you know, never mind. Ignore me. But yeah, I think Solana is going to like, I mean, it needs to shrink. It's propped up by all the VC money in illiquid Solana, mm-hmm. You know, trying to preserve their illiquid investment. And I just don't know if they're willing to like double down, or whether it's better to just cut the fat, you know, and just take the L, maybe buy, you know, the dip or whatever the hell. But yeah, Solana is just a mess right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, Solana, you know, Solana could be the future international settlement layer for all of finance. And it'd be worth like a dollar. You know, they have massive demand. It's gonna be worth like a dollar. It seems like they're just having terrible luck. So you know, the bright side is Bitcoin and Ethereum aren't gonna bleed that much, you know. But yeah. Solana, hopefully you know something I don't know about Solana, if you're still holding on to a lot of it. For your sake, buddy. And then what else we got here? Oh yeah, Islamic coin. This is what I wanted to talk about. Are you familiar with Islamic finance, Beebus?
I'm not, but this sounds right up my alley.
No, does it?
Oh yeah.
I think it's something you got to get involved in, dude. There's a new chain, HAQQ. Islamic coin. It's a blockchain focused on developing a Sharia compliant financial system. That means no usury. Okay, you can't take any interest on loans. Awesome. I forget what the name is for the term that they use instead. But no one pays any interest. You just have to share equity with, you know, whoever gave you the money.
That's awesome.
I think this has potential, dude. Have you ever heard of this?
Usury is a fail. That's why we don't charge interest on ethos.finance. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this is cool. I mean, like 100%. Like, dude, there's so much Saudi money, bro. Like, and a lot of it is willing to like just give it to a hedge fund and, you know, not dig into the details. Mm-hmm. But I think this is cool. Like you head into Saudi Arabia with your Islamic coin. The addressable market is massive. People have tried it and failed just because, mm-hmm. you know, they're also trying to go after the mass market. But yeah, I mean, I think this is awesome. And I think like, you know, usury sucks. If you've ever had a mortgage, you know usury sucks.
I didn't know this. So this is a Dubai thing. I didn't know they allowed women in business here. I'm very surprised to see this. I think this is really interesting stuff. And you know, I was thinking too, you know, the one group you wouldn't want to scam would be Muslims. So, you know, I would hope that this has got to be an extremely legitimate project.
I mean, like, this is like huge, huge market. I'm sure they're really well funded.
Scroll down a little bit.
Gotta be. I'm sorry.
Scroll down back to the advisory board. Keep going.
Uh-huh.
Keep going.
Okay.
Wait, shut up. Okay. Muhammad bin Khalifa bin Muhammad bin Khalid. I thought I knew that guy.
Oh, you thought you knew him? He's like 50 names, dude. That's how you know he's important.
Yeah, Mr. Coin says Islamic coin, probably FBI or CIA, LOL.
Dude, when you got people on your board called Sheikh Muhammad and Her Highness, like,
yeah,
bro, you're going to the moon, dude.
By the way, for all these Saudi princes listening, I am the current holder, owner of topsheik.eth and sheikcoin.eth. So hit me up.
You ever seen those videos where like they'll be auctioning like license plates in Saudi Arabia, and it'll be like vanity license plates, and they'll be like license plate that just says the word one on it will be like going for like $52 million. Like awesome. that might happen for you, Mikey, if you just keep buying up some themed.
I got top sheik and sheik coin, baby. Let's go.
But yeah,
sheik Dr. Haza bin Sultan. That is like, that guy is dope. If you're Sheik Dr. Sultan, you're mm-hmm. like, you're the ultimate guy. Like that's like a comic book hero, like just on their advisory board.
Dude, so basically I'm bringing this to your attention as a bag holder of Beebus products. Dude, I'm thinking you should integrate here into the HAQQ chain, because honestly, look at their DeFi offerings. Only SushiSwap.
And Hakka.
Come on, dude.
Honestly, I will sincerely look into it, because I think Ethos Reserve's architecture with a few minor tweaks. I mean, a tough part is there's not going to be any yield. Like when you're doing lending deals in a Sharia compliant way, they're much more complicated. So, you know, but the base system, like ignoring the rehypothecation, I think could be really significant. Or we can like create like an equity partnership with wherever we're farming yield from, and just, you know, find a way to make it compliant that way. Very interesting problem. I would say historically, when people have been one foot in, one foot out in terms of Sharia compliance, it hasn't worked out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know if we can be successful, but it is really, really intriguing, because this is a non-Western financial system. Yeah. It's like India is also like, their financial system is awesome. I mean, it's crazy, but it's awesome. And we're so used to, just because of the dominance of, you know, Western finance, nobody knows what's going on, in the Sharia compliant zones and the mm-hmm. Indian zones. I feel like China has mostly adopted Western finance. But yeah, it's extremely cool to say the least. And yeah, I mean, Ethos could literally fit there. And, you know, shout out Phantom Foundation for being like, we have Middle East connections thanks to them. So,
Yeah, very cool.
Oh, and of course, yeah. XR. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, no, I think it is fascinating, like you're saying, in that it's a non-typical, like not a non-Western financial system. They do work very differently, but not as differently as you might think. The only example that I've ever like studied, even like a little bit, was Iran. I think Iran is like one of the only financial systems that's like completely Sharia compliant. And it kind of works to their benefit, because of like their like position in global politics, you know, all like the what do you call them, embargoes and sanctions, because they can't access a lot of outside liquidity. But it's quite fascinating how it works. You know, if you buy a house, right, you still need like a loan to buy the house. It's just, you make like, it's like a lease to own type deal, is like the only possible, the literally the only way you can do it. And if you own a business, you just share, like you do profit sharing with like the bank or whatever until a certain like price is, like until you've paid back the capital or something.
Dude, that's awesome. That's cool. Like, I mean, lending is powerful. Like when, like we're kind of an accelerationist society, the power of lending in like a generalized sense is like, oh, let's just speed run, like, you know, technology. Let's just speed run development of the universe. So it's really cool in that way, but sometimes alternatives seem quite a bit more sensible. You get less stratification. Mm-hmm. You know, it's who knows what the best option is. I think there are way too many trade-offs to just make a solid like, hey, this is how things should be. This is the most fair. This is the best for mankind. Like infinite variables. It's a problem that will never be solved, but. You know, the fact that there are, you know, functioning economies with alternative systems is just awesome.
Gives hope for all of DeFi, dude. Oh, yeah. I wanted to do a little white pill segment here. That reminds me, man. We're so loosey-goosey this week on the show. Usually we have such more well-defined segments, but you know, we were feeling pretty bummed out, me and Mikey, yesterday about just like the state of DeFi. It just seems like bad news after bad news after bad news. How are you feeling over there, Beebus? You feeling like we're capitulated yet?
I mean, DeFi is awesome. I would say DeFi is in a way better spot now than it was in late 2022. Mm-hmm. Interest is coming back. Like some of our hedge fund friends just kind of restarted their operations. Talking about, you know, things are heating up on the professional end of things. So yeah, I mean, I'm crazy bullish. I think things are getting better and better. And, you know, the big issue I think we're seeing is, you know, there are exploits, you know, people are face planting. Oh, you know, what's the point? You'll suck. Give me some treasuries. But at the end of the day, like a lot of the issues are short term issues. Like this industry has been around for 3 years. You know, what are you expecting? One. Mm-hmm. And two, like all DeFi is such a clear replacement for existing infrastructure. And it's you can't understand that right now if you're not like a DeFi focused like engineer or technical manager. It's just hard to wrap your head around it. But you know, it's just the tech keeps getting better. People keep getting investment. You know, firms are improving their approach. Incentives are aligning better. Tokens just freaking work really well. And we're like in our infancy still. You know, maybe we're a toddler right now at the absolute most. But yeah, crazy bullish DeFi. Short term, like the curve thing, I think was a really big sad hit. And you know, that's kind of like a big deal. But the thing is, like the curve tech, it's just not as relevant as it was anyway. So is like a lot of these big players are maybe falling behind or running into some pain, but at the end of the day, that's just the churn. That's just the cycle. That's just the tide coming in and going out, coming in, going out. And, you know, what we see that way is progress. And I'm crazy, crazy bullish on progress and on DeFi. Just be careful, you know, understand that this is experimental. Don't freaking bet the house on penis coin. You know, maybe bet the car. Just kidding. But yeah. Just understand that you're investing in, you know, baby money.
So you're saying, you know, the tech, it's still great. It's still improving. It's still new. So obviously there's going to be growing pains, but you feel like that things might be starting to turn around a little bit, a greater sentiment wise. You're seeing people, investors dipping their toes back in the water.
Oh yeah. 100%. Like 2020, everybody's excited about 2024. Everybody's excited about 2025. You know, and that excitement isn't going to spill over to retail for a while. But things are humming, underneath, and, funds are growing. You know, professionals are getting excited about the opportunity, and that will translate eventually. That excitement translates to like large scale investment, and then it translates to the resulting marketing you know, that comes from investment like that, and then it slowly trickles down to public sentiment, and we'll get there. I think really the absolute DeFi sentiment killer was, you know, the meme coin explosion, followed by the Telegram bot explosion with token taxes, like, you know, running back, you know, safe move with revenue now. But so DeFi guys are like tired, they're demoralized. But at the end of the day, like I'm always freaking excited. I'm always freaking happy about the course of the industry, because since like Luna, it's literally been only up, you know, and
yeah,
I have the pleasure of having been there for the entire ride, literally from 2020. So I have a little bit of perspective there, and I'll tell you guys, it's freaking dope and it's getting doper.
All right. It's a little bit of a white pill there, a little bit of a white pill. I'm feeling a little bit better. Yeah, I think it has just kind of been like a straight roller coaster, hasn't it? In previous bull cycle or bear cycles, right? You know, I kind of don't even like the term cycle. Previous bearish trends, large bear trends that we've gone through, were they ever as cataclysmic as what we experienced, you think, Beebus, with, you know, Luna exploding, FTX exploding into fucking fire, and then all of these lawsuits back to back to back to back, Binance US being forced to shut down, CZ ousted from his company.
I think Mt. Gox was worse.
You think Mt. Gox was worse? Wasn't how much 100%. Of the Bitcoin supply was that at the time? It was a lot.
Yeah, it was like a huge portion. Like that was like absolute kill shot. And none of this has even felt like a kill shot. Mm-hmm. You know, Luna felt like you know, we shit the bed, but there's still demand. And you know, FTX, dude, when FTX happened, we should have gone to zero if some of the detractors were right. But it's like it barely moved the needle, you know. We saw like in real time, like the most insane corporate explosion, you know, rife with fraud and crime from one of the poster boys of the industry. And we were just like, fuck them, who cares? You know? Mm-hmm. And you know, the industry is still dope. We're still way bigger than we were, you know, even, you know, before 2021. So like, and yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just, everything is so awesome, guys. And then I have the benefit of
positivity.
Yeah. I have the distinct benefit of mostly operating on the business end of things. So, you know, things are still vibrant. They're not like glowing, you know, it's not like infinite growth and beauty and opportunity, but you know, people are still like really strong believers, you know, and it just so is like, what it is.
Like the great Richard Hart says, we're just up and to the right, baby. You just got to zoom out. We're still up to the right. Yeah. We're just going up and to the right always, baby.
Yeah.
Well, you know, okay, that puts me at ease a little bit, Beebus. You know, I was getting a little shaky. Not that I could ever leave. I purposefully handcuffed myself to this ship just in case it started to take on a little.
Get ready to die.
Yeah, you know, there's this great. I think we've talked about this before. There's a great book by Napoleon Hill, "Think and Grow Rich." You probably heard of this famous self help book. Though I stopped reading it immediately after I got to this part because I was like, this is all I need to know. He describes this anecdote where Columbus lands in the New World, and the first thing he does is he burns three of his ships, and he's like, we're not going back, dude. There's no going back. We either succeed or we die.
Yeah.
And that seems like kind of like what DeFi is all about to me, dude, to be honest. You're 100%. Hopping financial systems. That's pretty big.
It's like you're joining at the very bottom of a growth curve. And if you expect that to be a smooth ride, if you've ever been near a baby, if you've ever been near
a baby.
Yeah, dude, it's like, you know, it's going to be bumpy. And like my conviction is higher than most, but conviction, I think, overall for DeFi, for people who really get it.
I get it.
Crazy high.
Oh, I get it. Here's a good DeFi idea. Now that you mentioned babies, all right, so you have a baby, you mint an NFT of the baby, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you fractionalize it. Anyone who buys an NFT of your baby or whatever, right, the money all goes in that baby's college fund, education fund, all of that stuff. And then you're entitled to a share of that child's revenue when they mature.
Dude, now that is a good idea. And you know what? it's also perfectly implementable and could easily be executed.
Oh, yeah.
And I invite everybody that's ever done me wrong to try.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought you would like that because it combines a couple of our favorite ideas on this show, which is, you know, NFTs and slavery. so I thought you might like that. But yeah, so we're at the hour mark here. You know, sorry we missed you for the first half of the show, but, you know, I think we still had some fun. But actually, if you got a little bit of time, I kind of want to get your feelings on something we talked about right before you came on, if that's cool.
Sure. Mikey's
looking dumbfounded, stupefied.
Express my feelings.
Okay. Well, so we had talked a little bit about this with Mikey. Brian Armstrong, the CFTC should not be creating enforcement actions against DeFi protocols. He's saying we need to sell. He's saying, let's settle this in court. And, you know, I kind of like this guy's energy now. The more I see of him, the more I like him. Because he launches Base Chain and then he's immediately like, I'll sue you, dude. I'll try and sue me, man. And I kind of, you know, I get the feeling that you're kind of along this line too. You're always talking about you got to have robust legal infrastructure. You got to be willing to defend yourself in court, essentially, if you're going to operate in this space. But what really stuck in my craw is this guy, Chris Bleck. I don't know if he's doing this for engagement or what, but he says these DeFi devs have backdoors to drain all funds and make any changes to the code that they want. How is that decentralized? And this includes Coinbase's own DeFi project Base. Now, do you agree? I mean, I think it's undoubtable that there are some DeFi projects, if you can call them that. I mean, they're just scams, really, that are constructed for that specific purpose, right? For someone to just backdoor all the fun. Yeah. Wally pointed out, it's maybe not even really a backdoor. It might just be a front. Oh, wait, no. That comes in later. This is definitely a backdoor because you're hiding it. But I'm curious to see what you think. And what he points to here is just multi-sigs, pretty much. That every project has a multi-sig, and that is the security risk. And Chainlink also being another security risk, which Mr. Got Plenty is always keen on.
I mean, like, this guy's whole thing is just being like, I'm not going to say what I think about him, but this guy's
whole thing is
acting in a certain way that sells very well to a certain portion of people and does not accurately reflect reality. Not the legal reality, not the technical reality, not any reality. Mm-hmm. I think maybe his most, like, I like that he was pointing out Chainlink's weak multisig. Their multisig for a while was like 2 of 20, 3 of 20, and that's weak. And I think
4 of 9 now, apparently.
Yeah, and that's strong. You know, and I think like a multisig and like a multisig is in a lot of ways more secure than pretty much anything. Like, you can have a totally decentralized immutable protocol, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You can have no admin powers. You can have no pausing capabilities. And the thing, you know, that would be reckless. Like, only someone who doesn't understand software at all would think that's a good idea. And we have seen successes. I think Liquidy is the most resounding success on that front, being here is an immutable, unstoppable protocol that actually has product market fit. And I will tell you, being extremely familiar with the Liquidy code base, they threaded the needle, extremely risky, like deploying a protocol like that, hoping for the best. And they knew that. And they were in an experimental phase for a long time. It took a lot of battle testing to get here. They got extremely lucky. And it's just, you know, the nature of software, it's impossible to be perfect. It's impossible to create an environment that is 100% decentralized, because the human nature is to find ways to centralize. Like Bitcoin, like, you know, there are tons of points of centralization on the Bitcoin front. And it's like,
what he's
describing is like an economy. What he's describing is a society. What he's describing is, you know, people with aligned values, you know, moving toward a certain point. And of course, you know, multi-sigs and upgradability features and things like that are a little bit different. But at the end of the day, like, do you think the court wants like what he's saying? Like, Brian Armstrong is talking about setting legal precedent and creating legal strategy to govern decentralized organizations. Do you think a court wants a protocol that they aren't able to fish funds out of in the event of a subpoena or in the event of a criminal action, et cetera? They don't freaking want that. They would hate that. That's likelier to bring on enforcement action than anything else. And the case there is, oh, the enforcement action might fail until, of course, you're just like caging the developers and suing the DAO and doing whatever the hell. So to Brian Armstrong's point, I don't even know if I fully agree with him.
Interesting.
You know, I think the non-custodial skew is like very typical of fintech. It's like, it's not my problem. It's self-serve, you know. But also it's like, hey, if I leave a gun on the ground and someone kills someone with it, you know, am I culpable? You know, there are a lot of analogs, and it's a really complicated space. I think the CFTC is a lot more forgiving and has way more clarity than the SEC, for example. But fintech is just, it's like the success of fintech is contingent on like being right about the legality of your use case. And of course, Brian Armstrong is on the side of, oh, this is perfectly 100% legal. And of course, I'm going to argue that, you know, till my face turns red. But at the end of the day, it's up in the air. And that's the point. And I think precedent, whether it falls in our favor or not, is really great. But Chris Black, that's just like classic, like talking head. No, no.
Chris Blair, more like it, right?
And much respect. We need a guy like that to constantly be calling out, but it's like 99% of the stuff he says is just totally useless. But when it's useful, it's good. And that's why guys like that are really important. Not to be a hater of Chris Black. Don't, you know, much respect, but, you know, your stick is
proper respect, is proper useful. Respect offered the proper, the exact proper amount of respect we're offering.
The you exact right amount I offer you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that's a fascinating conversation. I've said the word fascinating a lot on this show, I'm realizing, but I really do think it's an interesting conversation to have maybe at a later date, because there's some similarities. There's a lot of thought experiments around this too. Like the idea of, I guess, like, you know, perfectly immutable code or whatever, right? The idea that it just exists and does its own thing without any input. Because there's some parallels you can draw. I've heard people describe it as like a, you know, designing a box that even I can't get into, designing a chest I can't even get to. But it's even more nefarious, not nefarious, but riskier than that. There's parallels to AI, you know, like if I design a really smart AI and it can live on its own and do its own things, am I responsible for the things that it does, you know? Yeah. Or
creating a box for everybody to live in that I can't touch. And then what happens when it turns out someone in that box has like a chainsaw and starts chopping everyone up, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, Chris Black's argument is purely semantic. It's like arguing about what the definition of decentralization is, as if it isn't multifaceted, as if it isn't a spectrum, as if there isn't space in the market for every level of decentralization. And it's like, bruh, like, I don't know what I guess his interest is in, like, he needs to have this shtick to sell his podcast.
Well, he's got
to
get views. He's got 9,000 impressions off that. That's got to be like a half a penny from Elon right there.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in the same game. We got to get those eyeballs. Maybe I should take some notes from Chris Black.
Yeah,
but definitely. I mean, I think another good example too. Tell me what you think about this. So, like, you're a software engineer, right? It's just like a regular engineer. If you're an engineer and you design like an automated like robot like on an assembly line, and it does its job pretty well, but like it just goes like haywire or whatever, and it just like starts like ripping people's heads off instead of like putting bottle caps on the bottles. like who's at fault for designing that robot? Like, you should have considered that there might be a need for me to turn this off at some point. Or
there are kind of two levels, and this is like tiered administration patterns. Like, that's the whole point. Like, every Reaper vault has three tiers of ownership, being, hey, this is not risky at all. You can, you know, do it, just make this adjustment. It's railroaded by the governance or the smart contract to just work out great. And then tier two, this is going to take more signers. This is going to be harder to push through. Something like pausing, like something like changing the functionality, of course, still governed by the smart contract and not be risky, but, you know, so be it. And then there's tier three, like really hard to get signatures for, really annoying to do, where it's like, let's add something, let's remove something, let's change something. Mm-hmm. And that's what's behind like a time lock, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's like Chris Black's whole argument. And it, again, I appreciate the argument. It's all about perspective and it's all about semantics. And having someone representing the extreme case is important just because it makes us think about that extreme case when we're designing trade-offs. So I would say he's an educator and he's good at what he does, being the extreme decentralization guy. And I appreciate it. But operating these protocols in reality, especially as complexity increases, is just a totally different story. And I would never argue with him because he's right from his like position. But, you know, what he thinks is not really indicative of the court's opinion. It's not indicative of reality. It's not indicative of, you know, the technical nature of what we're doing. I mean, it's just his opinion. And
so you're saying he's correct using the framework of his opinion, but using the framework of reality, he is incorrect.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's like the classic like debate club semantics guy, like, I'm going to have the ultimate handcrafted tourbillon argument. I'm going to beat everybody in this awesome debate. And then he steps into reality and it's like, you know, everybody's like treating him like he's special.
He steps on the debate stage and Donald Trump calls him like a fat loser.
Did you also watch that Netflix comedy special recently? There's this funny one, Shane Gillis, who's making a lot of these jokes. It was cracking me up.
I gotta watch it now. I've seen it on Netflix, but I haven't actually watched it yet.
It's one of the funnier ones I've seen in a while.
Okay. I haven't watched a good comedy special in a while. I gotta check it out. Definitely. Okay, so let's wrap it up here. We got a couple questions I want to touch on, and then I'll let you go, Beebus. I know you got lots of things to do. Let's start off with DeFi Guy. This is one you're going to have to answer because I have a suspicion of what the answer is, but I think I'm probably wrong. What is the risk of an L2 not generating proofs? I think, like, I'm not sure if he's saying, like, what are the chances of this happening or, like, what would happen if this happened? But
so the risk is not generating proofs. The protocols are in place. If proofs aren't being generated, they just stop the chain just because their value prop is, hey, we have Ethereum security, we're submitting these proofs, etc. So the result there is they stop the chain. But to be honest, it would probably be able to run anyway. And it would probably be able to run without issue anyway. Proofs right now exist, you know, in a theoretical sense, so that eventually they can rely on them for security at scale. So that's number one. Number two is, what if someone submits or is able to submit an invalid proof? Or what if someone is able to forge a proof? And then you run into the same issues that you see with, like, if you remember Binance's issue where a ton of stuff was minted from the bridge, like a really old deposit was leveraged to create a bunch of new BNB. That is a good analog, because if someone submits an evil proof, potentially they'll be able to withdraw a bunch of the collateral backing the L2. Now you wonder, hey, why does it take freaking 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days to withdraw from an L2. It's so that if someone submits an incorrect proof, they'll have time to be like, fuck you, dude, you stupid. That's not real. Yeah. And then they'll administer punishment and kill him.
Proper punishment. We'll slash your rewards, bro.
Yeah.
So seize your funds.
Yeah, that's the thing. So not really a big concern. Like, to Mr. Andre Cronier's point and other L2 detractors' points, L2s right now are just kind of blockchains just existing in their thing. And like, proofs are submitted to Ethereum a little bit as a formality, But of course, the idea is eventually it will allow these networks to scale very securely. And even so, this system helps the bridges be really hard. And that's the whole point. Again, to Mr. Andre Cronier's point, like the bridge is very dope. And that's like where the security comes from. It's collateralized bridge assets backed by the security of Ethereum. And then of course, like state on the chain overall is submitted, you know, through some Merkle tree or Verkle or whatever they're doing nowadays, not my domain. And that's great too. But right now it's mostly about just making sure that the collateral is safe and sound.
Beautifully put, Beebus. It's all about making sure the collateral is safe. So that's not really the risk. The risk is not the degenerating of the proofs. Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. Hope that it was helpful for you, DeFi guy, Astro Network, and Fala. Finally, there's a question for me from Mr. Got Plenty. What do I think about Blockstream buying $50 million of ASIC miners? He spelled it miners, M-I-N-O-R-S, and that is illegal. They're not allowed to do that. But I'm assuming you mean the PCs. Is it to control the hash rate and the ability to mine after the halving? Well, you know, what comes to mind for me is a quote from the prophet, the Muad'Dib of Arrakis. And he says, the person who has the ability to destroy a thing has actual control over it. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think, you know, they may be able to have control a substantial share of the hash rate, but I mean, market competition, I'm assuming, would just step in to ensure that they don't like completely dominate. But that's just my opinion. And that's what you asked for. So hopefully that helps. Well, guys, thanks again for coming today. I appreciate you showing up, Beebus. Mikey, thank you for riding co-pilot here. Anything you guys want to plug? Shimmer Space is on Monday.
Shimmer Space is on Monday. It's fun time. Come.
Did you get a new mic, Mikey?
Excuse me?
Did you get a new microphone?
I've had this microphone, but I normally don't use it.
Wow.
should I not use it?
I mean, maybe you should. I think you need some fine tuning, definitely. But yeah, sorry. I'm just like
nitpicking you, dude.
I'm like autistic about and mine probably sucks too. So you know,
yours sounds great.
Oh, thank you.
No Across the Chains tomorrow, guys. We got Across the Chains on hiatus for a while until we figure out what we want to do with it here. So yeah, we'll let you know when it's back. So if you want to see us again, get off this man's mic. So if you want to see us again, show up to our Shimmer Space on Monday. Mikey's going to be leading it. You're going to learn a lot about what's going on the Shimmer Network. It's going to be lots of big news I hear coming down the pike, Mikey. Get Beebus' thoughts on the Virtue demo on Shimmer. Mad sexy. Yeah, Beebus, I'm going to send you some homework. Next week, we're going to talk about that. The Virtue demo on Shimmer. Mad sexy. It seems like it's an Ethos-type project. So they're eating your lunch, bro.
It's holy a what? Cow. Oh, an Ethos-type project?
I thought you were in the fucking void, dude. It's honestly weird to me to see that there's like things in the room.
Are they rehypothecating assets?
Oh, I don't know yet. I don't know. I that's just what John Steps told me was somewhat of an Ethos reskin.
Oh, Virtue. Oh, the Liquidy. Yeah, from Nakama. Yeah, if Shimmer had deployed in last September, like they were going to, probably Ethos would have deployed with them. I know the Nakama guys are really interested in a stablecoin. Unfortunately, not like Ethos. More like Liquidy, possibly Gravita, et cetera.
Interesting.
If they did fork Ethos, we will be suing them.
I'll talk so-called decentralized. Am I right, guys? All right. Well, thanks again, everyone, for showing up. Please remember to like and subscribe and retweet and shoot us some comments. We'll be back on Monday, like I said, Shimmer Spaces, and then Tuesday for a live DeFi Tuesday show. All right, well, I'll see you guys. Beebus, Mikey, any final words?
Ethos.finance.
Ethos.finance. Peace, fellas. Roll credits. Hey, what's up, folks? Really appreciate you watching the show today. Please remember to like and subscribe and leave us some comments. We're always open to hearing some feedback. And while you're here, why not check out a couple other videos? See you next time.